This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
The March to Spring Training and Opening Day is upon us. Rob Bradford from Baseballs and Boring here, and we'll have you covered every single day with podcasts that aim to educate, entertain, and inform you as a baseball fan. Follow Baseballs and Boring in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz. Now, you might think Elliott Shore Parks in Indianapolis, we can't do Tuesdays with Elliott, but you would be wrong. Because he's here, live from Indianapolis at the NFL Scouting Combine, Draft Combine. Elliot, you there, brother?
Yeah, as people have unfortunately found out over the past few years, nothing can stop me from getting on WIP. So excited to be on and talk to you guys.
Nothing can stop you from posting online or getting on WIP.
That's exactly right.
No matter how
Blue
much...
Blue Sky, Threads, Instagram.
Stop. No matter how much they beg, Elliott Shore Parks is here.
Exactly right.
So, you know, the last thing we were talking about, and this seems like it's not really what I expected down at the Combine to be the top Eagles-related story, but it does seem like the Tush Push is the top-related story. Are you hearing, is there a lot of conversation, you know, we're talking about a lot, we see quotes about a lot because it's essentially about the Eagles. Is there a lot of conversation down there about it?
Yeah, so, you know, one of the weird parts about being on WIP all the time, and when I was on the morning show this morning, I said I did not think the Tush Push would be banned. Now that I have spent time down here in Indianapolis, around the head coaches, listening to them talk, I'm starting to think maybe there will be some momentum for the Tush Push to be banned. A bunch of head coaches today talked about how they don't like it. Raheem Morris said it should have been banned 3 years ago. Sean McDermott talked about how there's injury issues he's always had a concern about. But Nick Sirianni just spoke less than a half hour ago, and he basically pointed out that he thinks it's insulting for it to be talked about as being banned because it's viewed as an automatic play and people think it's not fair. And he highlighted all the work that they put in to make sure that play is good, the practice, the way they practice and all that. So I think the Eagles are prepared for a fight to make sure that this play doesn't get banned. But the more time I spend down here, the more I think that there is a fight coming to keep it.
So what they would have to do essentially is lobby with other teams to vote to keep it, right? I mean, so they need 24 votes of the 32 teams to ban it. Is that how it works?
Yeah, so the competition committee would obviously talk about it, and then at that point, yeah, it would go to a vote. So they would have to, yeah, lobby and, you know, try to convince other teams to vote to keep it.
I actually, see, here's where I wonder how they even keep it, because I don't know what the motivation would be for other teams to vote for it. There's aside from the Bills, who ran it pretty consistently and successfully, except for the championship game, I can't think of other teams who are taking advantage of it, and even Sean McDermott came out against it, too. So I just can't think of a way, and especially reading the quote from Troy Vincent, where he had mentioned he put it in the same category as the hip drop tackle, I can't think of a way that it wouldn't get banned, actually. Could you think of a motivation that another team would have to vote to keep it?
I mean, I guess it would be if they wanted to run it on their own. You could also argue, and I agree with you, it probably won't matter, but like just fairness. Like, you know, you would think you would vote for this and not have your own interests at heart, but obviously that's presumably not how these teams are going to vote. In terms of it being connected or compared to the hip drop, Nick Sirianni did talk about, you know, the fact that people say there's injuries involved. And he said that not only do they run it more than any other team, and they haven't had an injury over the past 3 years from it, that also, if you look around the league, there's just not a lot of evidence to suggest that there is injury concern with this play. Obviously, it's football. People are going to get hurt, but the Eagles don't view it as an injury risky play. So you're right. I mean, if I'm Washington, like, why would I vote to keep it? They don't run it, and it's going to be an issue for them. But I also, you know, I don't know how much the push actually helps them. So I think that even if it is banned, I still anticipate them being a good quarterback sneak.
Well, how does the push not help them? Like, what are we talking about? It's he's getting pushed through it.
We watch it. We watch it every week, right? How often do you feel like the push actually pushes him across the line? I feel like most of the times when they get it, they just completely take over the defensive line, and he is forward. Like, yes, he gets pushed, but I mean, that's my opinion. I mean, if you guys disagree, but like, I don't see it being close, and it's like a shoving contest with Jalen in the middle. Most times when they get it, he has successfully crossed the line prior to the push.
Well, one would argue then, if that were the case, then why are the Eagles so adamant about keeping it?
Well, I think they're probably adamant about keeping it because they invented it and it's their play.
Well, like, but no, it's obviously some sort of advantage for them. I mean, they aren't, if they just wanted to run the regular quarterback sneak, they could.
Yeah, I agree that they like being able to push.
Yeah, I'm just talking about
if this play gets banned, I don't think all of a sudden we're going to see the Eagles, you know, drop from like 85% on fourth and one to.
Well,
like
30%. I agree with you there. Yeah,
I think they're going to still convert these at a very high rate.
Yeah, I think, I agree with you. I don't know that. I think it's hard to see me. I see the push pushing him over. I think the question for me is like, are they pushing him over because, and Ike said this, yes, and I think it's fair to assume this, that Jalen knows it's coming, so he can sort of conserve whatever energy or whatever, you know, push he could do knowing that that's coming. He might not be going as hard as he can until that push comes. So it's hard to really tell.
I guess, though, like, if it was as simple as the push, then it would be automatic around the league.
But I'm not saying it's as simple as the push. I think their personnel makes a difference.
Yes.
For sure.
Yeah.
But it does give, you would have to imagine, it gives them some advantage to have him pushed from behind, or they wouldn't do it.
Well, I think it would give, and I guess to your point, like, yes, having the ability to push is a helpful mechanism if he is held up at the line and then you can push him past it.
Yes.
But just to relay what was said here, I guess what I'm saying is the Eagles don't view it as an automatic play. So when we talk about the push itself, like, I think they view it as successful because of the way they practice it, the way their line gets a push, the practicing of the snap, the way they practice it at practice, because it is a tough play to practice.
They literally line people up behind the quarterback and push him. What are you talking about?
Yes, but I'm saying if every team could push, then it would be an automatic play. It's not the push that makes it successful.
No, it actually is the push that makes it successful.
But then why is it not automatic around the league?
Nothing is automatic in life. Nothing
well, that's
is.
The point I'm making.
Well, nothing
I know,
is automatic.
But other
no,
than us fighting on Tuesday.
No,
but I'm saying
no, it's
that, like
we're saying the same thing. You're just. As usual, you have to be right by the way you want to be right. The fact of the matter is they are pushing him, and it helps. It's not illegal. It's nothing to be ashamed of. Don't try. Like, don't on one hand applaud the Eagles for creating this and being great at it, but on the other hand, you want to minimize it and say, well, you know what? They ain't really pushing him for real. They don't really have to push him. Yeah, they do. That else you wouldn't have the pushback against it, pun intended.
Right. Yeah, but I guess what I'm saying is if it was as simple as pushing the quarterback, you would see every team do it successfully. The Eagles are good at this play because of the way they run it. And then on top of that, you can say the push matters. But I don't think the push is the
Elliot,
part of the play.
Are you an O-lineman?
No, I was a kicker.
Right. So it's being explained as simple as we're explaining it, because nobody cares about all the intricacies that the players and the coaches go through on practice days that makes it effective. We're not getting technical with the tush push. You got to be 2 to 3 inches lower than the D lineman. Like, nobody's doing all of that. We're simplifying the explanation of it, and you're complicating it.
Well, because I think when the Eagles get to present their case as to why it shouldn't be banned, this is what they're going to bring up. They're not just going to get up there and be like, well, the push doesn't matter. They're going to highlight that the push is not the part of the play that makes it work.
Oh, okay.
We're chasing our tail.
I'm good.
Sometimes I like.
I thought I fully explained it right there. I don't need to say anything else on it.
Yeah. All right. We can move on.
You know what? Because what happens with these is I say it becomes a last word war.
Well, I'm trying to bow
yes,
out.
I know. Ike's bowing out of it.
I'll bow out.
Yes. I'm saying everybody back to their corners. Ding, ding, ding. You know, next round. Okay.
It's a tie.
And I did enjoy your tweet about it, Elliot. If the tush push gets banned, it instantly goes down as the best play ever invented in the NFL. I do think it sort of becomes the wilt of plays in some ways. If they have to do, you know, rules to stop it, I think that is pretty incredible, especially because every other team can run it, but they don't necessarily, you know, run it as well. Buffalo did have success with it this year, but I think my gut would be that they probably don't want to put, Josh Allen in that situation as much as they do. So the other big story down there is Myles Garrett. And we heard you ask, good question, you asked Howie about Myles Garrett.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
There must be a lot of talk down there about Myles Garrett. That talk that you hear and the, the general manager of the Browns?
Andrew Berry.
He continues to say that they're not trading him. The talk that you hear at the Combine, what do you think the possibility is that Myles Garrett gets traded? And what do you hear on that front overall?
Yeah, so I was at the Andrew Berry presser, and it's so clear they're going to trade Myles Garrett. Like, I've been at that press conference, that kind of press conference, like 1,000 times. It's like, well, we're not going to trade him. Meanwhile, they're one of the worst teams in the league. They have the number 2 overall pick. So he's going to be traded. And I think the expectation from being down here, being out last night, I'd imagine tonight, hopefully collect more information. But, like, I think the expectation is Myles Garrett is going to be traded. Now, I will say, I asked Howie at the podium, and I don't know if you guys played it live on air.
We did. We all heard what he did say.
Well, hold on. Let me set it.
You're this guy.
Well, you've done it 3 times in this interview already. Like, we didn't listen to the whole press conference. Like, I was just at the press conference.
Well, I didn't know you played it.
What are we, dumb in our jobs? Why are we not play Howie and Nick at the podium?
Well, If we really want to get into it, because it started at 2:00, and I thought you might want to set the show.
Well, we start at 1:45 because that's how we roll around here. Yeah, so we started.
Well, shout out to Joe and Hugh for giving you time. But
well,
anyway,
they stuck around.
Where I was going with this.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Well, it's good to see the station's running at a high level with me gone. But it was all right. Okay. So anyway, Howie said what he said, but prior to going to the podium, we had a chance to talk to Howie and Nick. Not on the podium. And he was asked a question that I think is probably more relevant than what he said at the podium, which was, in the past, he has traded first-round picks for elite players. He traded for A.J. Brown, mm-hmm. a first-round pick. He traded a first-round pick for Jason Peters back in the day. And the question was, just to be clear, not about Miles, but about what makes you know when it's time to trade a high-level asset for a high-level player. And I thought the money part of this quote was, to me, he basically said, we look at all those things. There are a lot of attractive items out there. We spend a lot of time talking about every position and every good player. We are selfish. We want everyone. At the end of the day, it's just not the position we are in right now. So you could read that as him saying, they're not going to trade for Myles Garrett, because he brought up, you know, whenever you pay a high draft pick and a lot of money, it has to make sense for where you are as a team. It has to make sense for where you are in the salary cap. And then that's when he said, it's not the position we're in right now. So I wanted to relay that information. Now, we can all probably still guess, like, the Eagles are going to be in on Myles Garrett and they're going to monitor it. But I do wonder if that was Howie setting the expectation that maybe they're not in a position to trade a high pick and give out a high level contract.
That's it. Yeah, I think it's interesting only because because of what we all thought maybe 2 weeks ago when this first happened. You know, they're always in on things like this. They went and they got A.J. Brown when A.J. Brown was available. They will have, if they let Josh Sweat walk, they will have an opening at that position. You could say overall that defensively it was probably their weakest position, edge, and that's no disrespect to Nolan Smith or Bryce Huff, of course, or Josh Sweat. But
he didn't even know Nolan until week 9.
Right, right. So I guess I just think that now I understand where they're coming from. You know, a team that pays that much money to that many players needing to use their draft picks. But I do think it's a little bit surprising. Are you surprised?
Now, so I was surprised that he said it. Now, the thing I'll always preface this with is I remember being at the combine a few years ago in the hallways yelling with Ike over the air because they were telling everybody, we're fine with Quez Watkins. We're fine with Quez Watkins. And then they traded for AJ Brown. Right. So like I do think you have to say, you have to take what they say here with a grain of salt. Right. But I do think it was an interesting quote from him for sure. Because the other thing, and my other probably big takeaway from Howie talking, is they really pointed out that young players are going to have to play this year. And last year they said the same thing, and then they did that. Jalix Hunt played, Nolan Smith played, Quinyon played, Cooper played. So Howie highlighted both prior to the podium and then also at the podium that you guys played, like they're going to play young players this year. And if that's the case, if Jalix is going to play, if Nolan's going to play, it's a big year for edges and defensive tackles in this year's draft. If they're going to draft one of those, then maybe he is telling the truth. Like, we're going to play young guys this year.
Right.
Yeah, and it could just be that they, they don't want to, they know how we are here as the media.
They don't want us to stir it up.
Yeah, exactly. So they may just be lowballing this thing, and just in case it doesn't happen, they never give out the indication that they were interested. But if there's, you know, if there's a deal to be made and how we can do it, like I said, Andrew Berry used to work here. So there's a working relationship already there between the two front offices.
Well, and if we're talking about, you know, he has no reason to publicly come out and say, we're interested in Miles Garrett, blah, 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 blah. You know, they are a team who has gone after big name players, even players that they didn't get. And, you know, you think back, I know it's a quarterback, you think back to Deshaun Watson, you think to things like that. So I don't, I think Miles Garrett would be just thinking, and you had brought this up at one time, like the idea of having Jalen Carter and Miles Garrett on the same defensive line is just like...
You wouldn't need blue shoes, I'll tell you that much.
Hardest wood I had ever touched.
Well, you do wonder, too, with the amount they've invested on offense and the identity of this team has been defense and running game.
You can't even add anymore on offense. Like, where can we add?
Is maybe looking forward, is it worth it to start thinking about financially investing defensively? It starts to swing the pendulum a little bit in that if they're going to be a defense first team and a run the ball team, is it worth it to spend as much money on skill position players on offense as they do? And that's a question that a lot of teams end up.
I'm gonna tell you what they're prepping for.
Yeah.
Jalen Carter's contract.
That contract, $6 billion.
That's what they're prepping for.
$6 billion over 5 years. Well,
I bleed for this city. It's a good point by Ike, because another point Howie made today was when you look at an offseason, you do have to think about upcoming draft classes. And next year, Jalen Carter is eligible for an extension, and Jalen Carter will get paid a lot of money. But let's say Nolan Smith has an awesome
year.
Let's say they don't trade for Miles Garrett, and Nolan Smith has double-digit sacks. I mean, then he's talking about a massive contract. Cam Jurgens is eligible for a massive contract. And then, I know this is pretty far out,
N'Kobe,
but Quinyon and Cooper. So,
N'Kobe,
So I do think they have a lot of bills coming up that they're going to have to pay. All that being said, if Miles Garrett makes it clear he wants to come to the Eagles and the Browns are willing to engage with the Eagles in a trade, there is no shot Howie says no. Now, maybe it's too rich. Maybe the Browns want too much, but they will engage with the Browns about this. I would be stunned if at one point this offseason there is not a conversation between the Eagles and the Browns about Miles Garrett.
215-592-9494. I have to take this call. Nick in Collegeville. You're on WIP. What's up, Nick?
Spike and Ike and Jack.
What up, Nick?
If I was married to the female version of Elliot, I would be divorced in a year. Like, sometimes you just got to go home
but
and
Nick,
go,
I like
honey,
you,
can you take, I love you too, but I don't know. Like, hey, honey, can you take the trash out?
Well, then
no,
let's stay together.
You don't realize it's 4 hours early. If I take it out now, then there's too much sunlight, and the trash is going to heat up, and it's going to smell more. I'm going to wait till the sun goes down, and then the breeze will pick up. I'm like, no, just effing take the trash out. Here's my thing. This is what I don't understand about the tush push.
Look,
and I'm all for keeping it because it helps us. But so I'll talk to the football guy. Like, when a running back or a wide receiver catches the ball going forward, if an offensive lineman gets behind him and starts pushing him, the forward momentum never gets stopped until there's like a break in the action and the referees feel comfortable blowing the whistle.
Yep.
But God forbid the quarterback's running backwards and then you catch him and keep pushing him backwards and he can't slow down because they're holding him up. They blow the whistle immediately.
Forward progress,
the defensive player.
Yep.
Right. So if I was trying to work against getting this thing not banned, basically, I would say as a team, like, hey, there's forward progress can be up to 99 yards. Like, if I'm on the 1 yard line, you push me all the way to the other end zone, the referees will never blow the whistle. But if I go backwards a half inch, you blow the whistle immediately and stop forward progress.
Yeah.
I have no idea why nobody's argued that.
That's a great point, Nick. That's a great point, Nick, because if you think about it, I'm not saying it happens every time, but there is more than the rare occasion where they are stopped initially, and then the push happens. They don't blow the whistle. And you're sitting there as a defender like, well, when are you going to blow the whistle? Forward progress is stopped.
Especially when let's say it's a wide receiver, and the wide receiver catches the ball on the sideline and two guys start pushing him backward. They can't blow that whistle fast enough to stop it. And it seems like they never blow it during the tush push. It does seem like there's a way they could add a rule in that doesn't make it illegal, but definitely makes it harder for them to be successful.
Yeah. And look, if they want to say, this is the easiest way to implement the new rule is, once you pass the line of scrimmage, you can get pushed by offensive players. But if you're behind the line of scrimmage, which is basically, you know, where the quarterback sits when they do a tush push, they can just say, there's nobody can touch the quarterback and push him forward until he gets past 1 yard forward in the line of scrimmage. So they could do that and prevent the physical push at the half a yard behind the line of scrimmage.
Yeah, there's a bunch of ways they could cut. And thank you for the call, Nick. I think there are a ton of ways they could make it. They could make without making the play illegal, changing the rules to make it much more difficult to run the play or have it be successful. But I think Nick brings up a really good point, Elliot. Do you debate like this at home? And does your wife like argue with you like Ike or I would? Like, how does that go? Are you is the reason that you are so committed to it because it never goes away? Maybe you're doing it all the time.
No, I probably fight like this at work because I can't fight like this at home.
That's a good point.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I'm too smart to.
No, but you know everybody that works here.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I will say what they could do. What they could do if they wanted to make the play harder or to all these ideas you guys have, they could just play examples of how other teams run it and say you have to run it that way. Because then, obviously, that's not a productive way to run it. I agree the way the Eagles run it, the way they snap the ball, the way they practice it. Like, yeah, that's it almost makes it unfair because they're so good at it. But in terms of actually preventing the play, other teams have plenty of ways to do it. Jordan Love falls over. Josh Allen didn't get a push. Like you see, it's not successful all over the league.
Well, Baltimore does it with the tight end. Baltimore does it with Mark Andrews.
Oh, you're right.
Yeah, they do the tight end. They motion the tight end in and then do it.
Yeah. So
the tush push.
I do. Yeah. So I also say too, the tough thing is to Nick's point, like if you're going to make the rule, you can't touch the quarterback until he's past the line. That just seems impossible to actually judge out on the field. I get the premise of the idea, but I think if it is banned, it'll just be flat out on a quarterback sneak. You cannot put your hands on the back of the quarterback.
Yeah. Whatever, yeah. Between the tackles, you can't push somebody forward, blah, blah. You can't push the person who receives the snap forward. I think there's a lot of different ways they could do it. All right.
That's what I think most likely happens. They may adjust it somehow, but they're not. I just don't see them taking something that's not illegal, and because a team does it well, penalizing the team that does it well.
Yeah, I think that's why Nick said it's not fair.
Yeah.
You know, it was funny to hear a grown adult say not fair, but it is kind of not fair when you think about it, you know?
Well, and it is the best, I think, counter too, if you're Nick. Like, to highlight all the work that they put in to make this a good play, I think that is a good counter argument if they do talk.
He was ready for it.
Yeah, well.
He was ready for it. He came out there with that answer on purpose.
He was mad. I'll say being there, he looked, I thought.
What's the biggest thing? Listen. You know I'm a Nick guy.
But that's his thing.
That's his thing. Yes. That's his signature.
It's like
play.
His skyhook. You know? It's
nobody invented the
It's like the skyhook is ugly, everybody hates it, and they're like, it's unfair. It's like, okay, well, if it's so unfair and easy, you should do the skyhook too. Notice nobody's ever done the skyhook.
Nobody really does it.
Yeah. So, all right. Elliot is with us until 4 o'clock. Coming up next, two important things. First of all, we'll talk about the likelihood of the Eagles keeping all of their free agents, or especially the big four. We'll talk about Saquon, what Nick Sirianni said about Saquon, and what Joe Shane said about Saquon.
Joe Shane spoke?
And we will take your calls on the Tush Push as well. And as well, Elliot will get his moment of glory talking about the Philadelphia 76ers. He deserves it. We got to give it to him. I can't silence him forever, or I'll just keep tweeting about it. I'd rather he just do it here and we get the content out of it. This is the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz.
He's always a forward thinker, man.
You know?
You know it.
Make it through, and maybe I'm too good for you. Oh, do you believe in life after love?
Oh yeah, it's the WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz. Look, believe by Cher.
Hey,
it's a jam. The song's always good, man.
All I know is Cher was great in Mask.
She was great in Mask. Was she in Moonlighting too? Was that Cher?
Mask is the only one I remember seeing her in.
Oh, I think she was in I think she was in Moonlighting.
Okay.
I think she was. Yeah.
You can keep looking at me. I got nothing.
Cher had a moment.
Mask is an 80s movie. We know you haven't seen it.
Is that the Jim Carrey movie?
No, that's The Mask.
The Mask.
Yeah.
Well, maybe they should have picked a different title.
I thought you were talking about The Mask, too.
Yep. No.
I forgot you were even there, Elliot.
Yes, yeah.
I know, me too. What the hell?
It's Tuesdays with Elliot. I think the movie Mask was probably 86, something like that.
Yeah.
Right, that mid-80s. Mm-hmm. It is Tuesdays with Elliot. Elliot is at the NFL Draft Combine in Indianapolis. And, you know, just to finish up on the Myles Garrett and free agency thing before we get to Joe Shane and your moment in the sun on the Sixers, is what do you think? Is there, so I keep, the Eagles have a bunch of free agents. The four that I think everyone seems to be focused on, and rightly so, are Zach Bond, Milton Williams, Josh Sweat, Mekhi Becton. Do you think there is a world in which they keep all four of those players?
No. I think there's a 0% chance they keep all four players.
I think
Josh Sweat's gone.
Yeah,
I think Josh Sweat's definitely gone. I mean, Jeffrey Lurie said after they won the Super Bowl in New Orleans that essentially, and I'm paraphrasing, they're expecting to get comp picks in the draft next year, and you only get those comp picks by players leaving in free agency and then not signing players in free agency. So they, I think, are expecting Josh Sweat to get a big deal, which will net them a comp pick. I think they're expecting Milton Williams to get a big deal, which will probably net them a comp pick. And then I think Becton and Bond are the ones where the market will really dictate whether or not they stay. But I think Sweat's definitely gone.
I think it's, to me, that, but you hearing, think, you saying that Milton Williams is definitely, you think, is almost certainly gone, and Josh Sweat is almost certainly gone, just brings me back to Myles Garrett. I can't even imagine the defensive line without those two guys. Milton Williams is awesome this year. Josh Sweat would have been the Super Bowl MVP if it wasn't for that pass to Devontae Smith, really, in the second half. I mean, probably.
That was underthrown.
Oh, Cooper DeJean.
No, it would have been Josh Sweat. Come on. I don't know. I think that's losing a lot, losing those two guys.
Who do you think they want to see at Disney World, Josh Sweat or Cooper DeJean?
Well, probably Cooper DeJean. Well, I don't know why you would say that, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I...
Elliot's just uncomfortably sitting there. Can you laugh a little bit? I mean, loosen up, pal.
I'm just trying to wait.
Yeah.
You looked at me. I was laughing. You didn't hear that chuckle out of me?
All business all the time, no. Elliot. Yep.
look, I'm Big J Elliott right now.
Yeah.
My media credential, I'm working. But no, I do think that, yeah, you're right. Like losing Milton Williams and Josh Sweat, you can talk about playing Moro Ojomo and Jalix Hunt. And I do think they are good young players that I'm interested to see what they can do. But I don't think Howie Roseman's going to go into next year with Jalix Hunt as a starting defensive end. And so an important thing to note is if they trade for Myles Garrett and pay him a big contract, that does not count like a free agent. So that wouldn't impact their comp formula. So that's, you know, when they say they expect comp picks, that doesn't really impact Myles Garrett at all.
Cool. That is good. Myles Garrett, I don't know, man. That would be awesome. Okay. Before we get to the Saquon stuff, Ken and Cinnaminson, you're on WIP.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you today?
What up, Ken?
Elliot, I hope you're staying out of trouble in Indianapolis, although it's hard to get into trouble in Indianapolis, so you should be.
Seriously.
Good. Yeah, it's not New Orleans, I'll just put it down.
No, it's not even Cinnaminson, actually. So before I get to the numbers, because Ike and I were, I was thinking the same thing Ike was thinking, so I looked up some of these numbers, and it's actually pretty interesting. Just two things really quickly. I think the reason Nick Sirianni was mad was mainly because the Packers guy used the word, used the phrase that he basically said it doesn't entail any skill. So when Nick Sirianni said it was insulting, it was insulting that this guy from the Packers is saying, well, that doesn't require any skill, when Nick knows how hard they practice it and how hard it is to perfect. So I understand where he's coming from.
Heard those comments before he went out there, too.
Oh, no question about it. No question about it. If I heard him, and you know, I'm not a coach in the NFL, then I'm sure Nick heard him.
Well, I don't know. He could have been busy now, and I don't know if he's listening to the.
And then on you mentioned that Troy Vincent categorizing it in the same category as the hip drop. Ironic that there were zero hip drop penalties called in 2024 in the NFL. So I'm not really sure that's a great example for Troy Vincent to be using, since they put a rule into place that was never enforced one time in the NFL in 2024.
You could also suggest that players did it less, and that's probably that could be a reason why it was called less.
I just think it's impossible to enforce, so that's why it wasn't called.
On the
numbers, so according to the NFL, from 2017 to 2022, just regular quarterback sneak was successful at an 83.6% rate. Also according to the NFL, the Philadelphia Eagles and the Buffalo Bills have combined for 163 push-pushes. And I don't know that the Bills call it the push-push, but neither do the Eagles. But the Eagles and the Bills, who are two biggest practitioners of that play, have combined for 163 of those in the last three seasons at an 87% rate. So that's, what, a 3%?
Slightly better, yeah. Slightly better, right? Yeah.
So slightly better. The Eagles in 2024 converted 28 out of 34, which is 82%, which is less.
Right? Okay.
Now, we know that with the Eagles – in particular, there were times this year where, you know, they ran it in succession. Like they got down to the goal line, they ran it on second down, it didn't score. They ran it on third down, they scored. And the one that doesn't score counts as a failed push-push. So even if you use the 87% success rate that comes from those two teams, and you extrapolate that out to 34 tush-push attempts for the Eagles in a season, that 3.5% difference comes out to one play. One play that otherwise would have been a first down or a touchdown that doesn't work because they banned the tush push, and so now the Eagles are just are just going with the traditional quarterback sneak. And what these teams are really trying to do, and this is what the point is, the point is not the tush push. The point is that Nick Sirianni is very aggressive going for it on fourth and one, basically anywhere from, you know, his own 45 all the way down to the goal line.
Hell, I would say, Ken, I would say depending on time of the game, it could be for his own 35 to 40-yard line he might decide to do it.
I'm just talking about, you know, just typical circumstances. So if they ban the tush-push, it's not like Nick Sirianni is going to say, well, geez, we're not going for it on fourth and one anymore. They're still going to do that. So they just won't be able to do the tush push anymore.
Well, they were a lot less aggressive. They were mid-pack this year in going for it on fourth down compared to the rest of the teams in the NFL. So previously they were very aggressive going for it on fourth down. This year, not nearly as aggressive as they've been.
Analytics department out of the way.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, but some of that might have been him listening to you guys crying about taking the points, right?
Not me. That's
Ike. He was listening to me, yeah.
Yeah, that's
Ike. Well, they won a Super Bowl. I want everyone.
They won us a Super Bowl,
yeah,
kid.
Once they got the analytic dorks out of the way, yeah.
We're on the same page on this one, Ken. Rarely, but it happens.
Yeah, you're both wrong.
Okay. All right, so Ken.
I guess overall, just the point is that it really does feel like, you know, these coaches are targeting the Eagles. I mean, Sean McDermott is the second biggest practitioner over the NFL, and he's saying it's unsafe. So what does that say to his own offensive lineman about what he cares about their health, right? Like, hey, I'm telling the league this is unsafe, but, you know, you go out and do this.
Like, I'm actually surprised at Sean.
It did seem like a weasel move.
Well, I'm just, as much as he uses it, how are you against it?
Maybe he doesn't want to use it.
Well, they can't do it. They were the one that messed up in the playoffs.
Well, they do it pretty well.
They did it pretty good, though. Yeah, Josh Allen's a big guy now.
I mean, we didn't have a ton of success against the Jacksonville Jaguars. It didn't mean we couldn't do it. You know, we had a bad game. They just had a bad game doing it. So
the last piece of it, too, is you know, how ugly the play is. You know, as soon as somebody comes up with an aesthetically pleasing quarterback sneak, I'm dying to see it. Because whether it's a push or not, it's just a massive humanity, you know, trying to move the ball 1 yard in one direction or the other. So there's nothing aesthetically pleasing about a quarterback sneak inherently. So that's all nonsense. Like, it really is these teams that are targeting the Eagles and you know, trying to find something that they can they're trying to gain some kind of competitive advantage, like, you know, psychologically, like, we're going to take this away from you, because the numbers suggest it's not really that big of a difference.
I thought that's the point you were trying to make when you gave me all those numbers. You're saying that it isn't as much of a difference as people try to make it out.
It's not
to be.
It's
I got
really
you.
This is the NFL's numbers, so I'm not.
I hear you.
I do think they have a mental advantage with that play. I think that is,
that is
numbers
true.
Aside. So, and thank you for the call, Ken.
That is true.
Yeah, I think, like, when you break down, even when you break down baseball players, the difference between a 275 hitter and a 295 hitter over half a season, not really that many hits, right? But if you know that a play is difficult to stop, I think the Eagles have a significant mental advantage with the tush push. The other team goes into it thinking, oh, geez.
Oh, here they go, the damn tush push.
Right.
Yep.
I also think the Eagles on the offense have that advantage as well. Because you're right. I think when the defense lines up, they think to themselves, we're not going to stop this. But I think Nick is able to be so aggressive in certain situations because they themselves also feel like when that play is lined up. I mean, I've been, you know, the stadium goes crazy when they get into formation. Like, it's a thing. So I do think there's an advantage as well for the offense there.
We will talk about Saquon right after Jack talks about the great folks at National Appliance Warehouse.
The best.
Come
actually,
on.
My parents actually went down to National Appliance Warehouse.
Whoa, did they tell him Fritz sent you? Or did they say we're Fritz? Or how does that even happen?
How does that work?
They pulled the big card. They said, hey, do you know who I am?
Yes.
And a whole bunch of confetti fell from the ceiling.
Yeah.
Listen, they experienced what I've been telling you for over a year about National Appliance Warehouse, and it's just different there. They have great savings events like the President's Day mega sale that has been extended at National Appliance Warehouse. It's their biggest savings event of the year, so get down and experience what I've been preaching here for over a year about National Appliance Warehouse. So they have the President's Day mega sale. They're also in tax-free Delaware, but on top of that, they also have Price Assure, which is a piece of technology specific for National Appliance Warehouse that instantly updates price tags all throughout the store if it finds a lower price elsewhere. On top of that, you're going to get the right appliance for you. Over 100 brands in their 15,000 square foot showroom, from sub-zero to budget, and you're going to get a great experience. You walk into National Appliance Warehouse, you truly feel like you're a part of their family, and they're also pretty dang knowledgeable about their job as well. They also, includes delivery and installation. So go to nationalappliancewarehouse.com or visit their showroom in tax-free Wilmington or Middletown, Delaware today. And as always, tell them Fritz sent you.
Even if you are a Fritz, as we found out.
Exactly right.
So somebody asked Nick Sirianni, Elliot, today about Saquon Barkley's workload. I was actually surprised. We got a question not about his hometown or his high school or whatever. Here is what he said about Saquon's workload.
We do everything we can do to win each and every game. And a lot of times this year, that meant Saquon carrying it 20, 25 times. And that also is the case of what kind of game you're in, right? If you're in a game or in a 4-minute game, you're going to keep pounding the ball to run the clock through and still be aggressive. But you handle and the maintenance of it, and Saquon handles the maintenance of it throughout the week. You know, Saquon had a couple more carries and a little bit more of a load this game. All right, how are we going to manage them throughout the week? Well, that's going to be the same thing through OTAs. That's going to be the same thing through training camp, and that'll be the same thing we go through it. And when we get to game one, we're going to do everything we can do to win that game. And if that's him carrying it 20 times, then he'll do that. If it's going to be he carries it one time, we'll do that too. It probably won't be one. We're going to give it to him more than that. But we'll do that as well. And so, but it, there's so many good people in our organization that help with that process of not only with Saquon, but with our entire team of making sure that they have the right workload week in, week out to be ready to play on Sundays.
I understand what he's saying, Ellie, about doing what it takes to win that particular game. But I also think if that's, I think it's a little bit short sighted in that my guess would be they will go into games with the plan to use him a little bit less. As Ike said last week, certainly in the first maybe 4 to 6 games of the year and ramp him up. But I would hesitate if I'm them to say, you know, by game two, they're like, well, Saquon works again. I just like, I keep.
Or if nothing else is working and they have to give him the ball.
Yes. I would almost say that is on them to maybe figure out the other stuff as best as they can and not fall into this trap. Yeah. And the only reason I say that is because looking at those numbers of those backs after that, it just, we're begging for an injury or something.
Or, no doubt.
You know, or even the players that didn't get injured, you know, you see Eddie George's yards per carry drop to 3, and I think it was
DeMarco Murray.
Ricky Williams, his yards per carry dropped to. So do you I guess, Elliot, it's not so much a question as to what do you think about what he said about doing whatever it takes, even giving it to him as much as they have to get a win?
So I think he has to say that, obviously. I do think they go into games hoping not to use him as much. I think when the doing whatever it takes to win thing comes into play is midway through the third quarter, if the only way to win the game is to give it to Saquon, like that's when you kind of have to throw out the plan. But going into this year, I do think a difference could be, A, to your point, the numbers are the numbers. The Eagles are an analytically driven team. They're aware of this. I think they will know going into the year they have to maybe be way easier on them in training camp again earlier in the year.
Yep.
But I think the other part of it, easier training camp practice, like I've always said. But the
well,
other,
I'm okay with it for Saquon. Yeah.
There we go. Yeah. All right. the other part of it, though, is Will Shipley. Like they like Will Shipley. They, you know, obviously spent all last year developing him. We'll see if Kenny Gainwell is back, but I do think their excitement about Will Shipley could make it easier, you know, not to go into a game where maybe you're giving Will Shipley 8 touches as opposed to Kenny Gainwell was getting, you know, 3 or 4 or whatever. But ultimately, it'll come down to like in the fourth quarter if they have to give him the ball. And I just don't think that because he got so many touches last year in the fourth quarter, Nick's going to sit there and go, well, no, go to Shipley. Like it'll be about Shipley early in games and doing that way and then seeing what you have to do in the fourth.
And the quarterback throws the ball a little bit better. The pass game is better next year.
Well,
hopefully,
that's part of it too.
Yeah.
Yep.
And you think they like Shipley enough. Do you think they would look at a running back in the free agent? In the free agent class, not a $12 million a year guy, but maybe a level or two below that. But do you think they would look at that for next year?
I think it's more likely they'll look for someone in the draft, and then they'll go Saquon, Shipley, and a rookie in the draft. They do have Tyrion Davis-Price, who was a former high pick, was on the practice squad all last year. They brought him back on a futures contract. I think he certainly is going to have to earn a roster spot, so I'm not saying he's part of their plans, but I don't think you'll see them spend on any type of like real running back in free agency. I think it's more likely they would draft somebody like maybe in the 4th or 5th round or something like that.
Now, Elliot, you were the one that asked Joe Shane about Saquon, right? That was you?
Yep.
Look
front
at him.
Center.
He
Absolutely.
Is going for Insider of the Year. Why don't you break
Giants
that?
Giants Insider of the Year.
Why don't you break that freaking Nick Sirianni extension? Break it so we can give
I'm
you
trying.
The award. All right.
I'm trying.
All right.
I appreciate it.
Here's what Joe Shane said.
Saquon walking free agency. How do you view that? And do you regret not re-signing him?
Yeah, I'm happy for Saquon. Obviously, he went on to win the Super Bowl, and we're wishing nothing but the best. Always going to evaluate all the decisions you make, and we were at a different place in our build. And again, love Saquon and wish him nothing but the best.
He got out of there as quick as possible.
Do you think he got the thank you card from Buzz and from Philadelphia?
I should have asked him.
Yes.
That would have been good. I should have asked him.
That wasn't signed by 300 Eagles fans, signed by far fewer.
Not likely signed card.
Yeah, no, I'm not going to let it go at all. All right, Elliot, before we let you go, you know,
Show time to shine, kid.
Well, I mean, the Sixers season came crumbling down here, and as you celebrate the downfall of one of the greatest players
and the first one to say Joel was cooked.
That's what I'm saying. As you celebrate the downfall of one of the greatest players in franchise history, do you want to take a little victory lap here?
Well, look, I don't want to dance on anyone's grave. I did take some joy seeing you tweet out Joel is cooked. Like that did feel good. But
he must have said, wait a minute. You said word for word, Elliot.
I don't think I tweeted.
You did. Well, you wrote
the something. Ricky did.
Well, I don't always tweet from the Ricky account.
Likely excuse.
No, it's CJ.
Sure, whatever. You can make up people. I got you.
He's our producer.
Man, my ass.
Yeah. Oh. Honestly, at this point, though, like, who cares about Joel? His career is over. It's sad.
Wow.
He's a great player, but his career is done. I want you to admit Paul George is cooked.
He's not.
He's absolutely cooked.
I tried to tell you Joel was cooked. I'm telling you Paul George is cooked. Tell me why he's not cooked.
Well, because here's what's true about Paul George. Complete loser energy. He had an opportunity as a great scorer to win the team. He couldn't have saved the season. I don't think anybody's going to save the season. Maxey didn't. Nobody saved the season. But he certainly could have dug deep, and he certainly could have taken more offensive load on himself, and he chose not to do that. What I saw happen, and this is what people warned me with Paul George, Clippers fans, they were like, you know, when things aren't tough, when things are tough, he's not the guy. And that's true. He's clearly front runner guy, clearly has no desire to step up and become a guy that can help them. However, like, as far as being cooked, I think if the team was good, he'd be good. And I think he would be good on another team. He doesn't look cooked physically to me at all, actually. He just looks uninterested, which to me is actually way more disappointing than being cooked. I don't think he's cooked. You know, Clippers fans are saying he had a good year last year, and they say he looks exactly the same. So I don't think he's cooked, but I do think he's a loser, to be honest with you.
So to me, though, part of being cooked is that because he has all this money, he just doesn't care anymore, right? So.
Yeah.
You can say that's what he was last year, but they paid him to be something he is not. So
well, that's true, but that's different than cooked to me. Cooked is what Joel is.
But here's the difference. I think the sad thing is it's not going to happen. Like, they're not going to compete next year. But let's just say in a miracle world, Joel is himself next year. Maxey's awesome. Like, I think Paul George doesn't have it in him to be the guy they wanted him to be, because there were times early in the season where he could have been that guy. So I do get your point that it is maybe an emotional or like a mental thing, but that to me is part of being cooked.
Well, that's what I'm disagreeing with you on. I'm disagreeing with you on the physical part of it. I'm not. He doesn't. When I hear cooked, I think about where Joel is right now. Now, you say they're not going to compete next year. Would you say that's because Tyrese Maxey is not good enough to be the best player on a championship team?
No, I don't think you can say that yet. Tyrese Maxey.
Well, then why aren't they going to compete next year?
Because they have $120 million in dead money in Joel and Paul George every night lining up on the court. Maxey, you're right. Maxey has had disappointing elements to his season. But I never said Maxey could go out and carry a team that has two players every night. Well, that's true. If you want to talk about building around Maxey, it's tough to build around any player that has $120 million
in
dead money.
You told me you were going to give me a team that was built around Maxey that could compete for a championship without a player better than Maxey. And that was 3 months ago. Have you put that team together yet?
No, I'm still working on it.
Okay, all right.
He had a Super Bowl to win in Spike.
Yes, that's a good point.
But
congratulations on being right about Embiid, though.
But
congratulations on saying
quickly
that the player that's always injured was going to be injured this year.
Well, you were the one that said he was going to be fine. So
well, I didn't say
he
was going to be fine. I didn't say
you should diminish that point.
I didn't say
here's what I would say to wrap this up.
Like, yes.
What player on the Sixers has the best chance to be the best player on a title team from here on out? And that's clearly Maxey.
Well, but that doesn't mean he can do it.
No, but what my point was when we had this was it's not Joel. Joel's days, and I said this months ago, Joel's days of being the best player in a championship team are over.
You're right.
So Maxey is their best chance. That was my point, and that's still correct.
But best chance doesn't mean that there is a chance.
But it's the best chance.
Okay.
It is. That's what you want to bring up what I said. That's what I said.
What? Their best chance is actually to trade Tyrese Maxey to try to get a player who will be the best player on a championship team.
But only because Joel is such dead money. That's only why.
Well, and because Tyrese Maxey will never be the best player on a championship team. He can't.
And neither will Joel.
Well, but... All right.
But that's what we got into.
Paul George has to stop saying he's a Kobe guy. That's all I need to know. He needed to change his jersey number.
Out.
Yeah. Yes, like, this is my point.
Completely undisrespected to Mamba.
Totally.
And like, Paul George has to go.
Paul George has to go.
Yeah. Right. I always defend when I bring up Kobe. It's only out of respect of Kobe.
No, I'm with you on this one. Yeah. Some guys take a little bit of advantage of this.
Exactly right.
Now, I can't hang up on Elliot. Can you turn his thing down?
I don't know. He's kind of
cooking right now. This is the best thing that's ever happened to me. Yeah. Like the Paul George quote last night when he said, like, they have no championship attitude. That's a direct reflection on Joel, by the way. Like when he says they don't have championship habits,
but he's a loser too. Joel.
Yeah, and
that's fine. Here's but they're the both
thing,
losers.
But I agree. But here's the thing: a player who's never playing, I don't care how good his attitude is, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter how great Joel's attitude is. He's not playing. So a player that plays, you know, 19 out of 56 games, I don't care how good his attitude is. It doesn't matter. It's on Paul.
But I think we're seeing attitude does matter when they're losing by 50 points. Like they have a
the attitude of Tyrese Maxey. All right. Well, I'll talk to you when you get
good
back.
Times.
All right. There he is.
We're just focused on championship. And I know you have to squint a little, but
yes,
feel like this group can still do that.
That is Daryl's gold standard. It's his gold standard moment. The Twitter question brought to you by Mark's Jewelers. Mark's Jewelers are jewelers, not just jewelry resellers. Experience the difference at marks-jewelers.com. Should the NFL ban the tush push? We need a new question. 95% say no. Coming up next, we will talk about tush push. We'll also talk about Myles Garrett. Jeremy Fowler talked about the Eagles' chances at Myles Garrett. We'll talk about that next. It's a WIP Afternoon Show with Ike, Spike, and Fritz.